Joe Biden had a habit when he was campaigning for president. He'd name a problem facing this troubled country and say he'd address it on day one.
Today is day one. What does the new president plan for the hours after his inauguration?
I'm Noelle King here with Steve Inskeep, and this is Up First from NPR News. President Trump ends his term by pardoning an indicted advisor and a big political donor. He still faces a Senate trial for inciting a mob to attack Congress.
They were provoked by the president.
It's Republican leader Mitch McConnell. What's that mean for the chance of a conviction?
Also, is a new strain of coronavirus responsible for California's surge of cases?
We are going to be in a cat and mouse game with the virus for a while.
Stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Salesforce, dedicated to helping growing businesses connect their teams, share information, and automate processes all in a single app. Learn more at salesforce.com/SMB.
Precisely at noon today, Joe Biden becomes the nation's 46th president.
Chief Justice John Roberts will lead Biden through the oath of office. Roberts did the same for Donald Trump and before him, Barack Obama. That's one piece of continuity in an otherwise unusual inauguration. Biden will take the oath on the same stage where rioters who'd been incited by President Trump swarmed to the Capitol this month. The National Mall will be filled with flags representing people who can't come because of the pandemic. And on the night before their inaugurations, other presidents have held celebrations at the Lincoln Memorial. Last night, Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris went there to honor people who died of COVID.
To heal, we must remember. It's hard sometimes to remember, but that's how we heal. It's important to do that as a nation.
Biden has repeatedly said the pandemic will be his top priority.
NPR White House correspondent Scott Detrow is part of our team covering the inauguration at the U.S. Capitol today. And Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
What do you see?
You know, it's hard not to look down on this platform and not think about the fact that just 2 weeks ago it was filled with rioters and tear gas. But as you mentioned, right now the Capitol is in its ceremonial atmosphere for this inauguration. Here's the things that look the same compared to previous inaugurations. There's flags. There's bunting. There will be military bands. Here's what's different. The platform is much more empty than usual. There are seats clustered in social distancing patterns, and the mall to my right is just completely empty because people cannot be here because of a pandemic and because of the major security threat that has arisen after what happened here 2 weeks ago. So this will be a very unusual inauguration.
Well, let's just think through what we will see later today. Joe Biden will deliver his inaugural address at that same lectern where other presidents have been. And who's behind him? Like members of Congress and of the Senate will be back there, right?
That's right. His family will be there as well. We know President Obama, President Bush, President Clinton, and former first ladies will be in the audience, and Vice President Mike Pence. He will be here. Of course, President Trump will not be attending this inauguration.
And is it correct? It's not that there's nobody in front of him, right? There are a limited number of seats for dignitaries out there.
There are. If you've been to the Capitol, I'd say that the socially distanced chairs, about two in a cluster, are spread down about halfway through that mall that makes its way down the west front till you get to the statue of Ulysses S. Grant, and then you get the mall. So there's probably going to be maybe 400-500 people or so, a rough guess. Obviously nowhere near what we're used to seeing at inaugurations. I'm thinking about when Biden was inaugurated as vice president and hundreds of thousands of people were on this mall. Now it's covered in blowing American flags.
Scott, you mentioned that rioters were on that very platform just a couple of weeks ago. What was security like as you headed in today?
It was intense. There were several security perimeters, several checkpoints. The fences were topped with barbed wire. I saw a National Guard everywhere, on-duty soldiers and soldiers sleeping in the basement of the Senate who are coming on for later shifts. There's Border Patrol. There's Capitol Police. Any government agency you can think of with law enforcement has a presence here today.
So let's talk about substance. The president-elect, of course, will deliver an inaugural address, and then he gets right down to work. He's got the afternoon to work, and I gather he's planning to get some things done right away.
It's a working day. Biden campaigned since day one of his presidential campaign saying, on day one, I'll do this. On day one, I'll do that. And he's following through. There are going to be 17 executive actions signed today. Just to tick through some of the areas, on COVID, he's going to rejoin the WHO, require masks on federal property. Climate and the environment, he's going to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. He is going to revoke the presidential permit for the Keystone XL pipeline. He plans to reverse the travel ban on primarily Muslim nations. And he is also going to send a bill to Congress, a sweeping immigration bill that will include a pathway to citizenship for the 11 million people in the country undocumented right now.
I guess we can't expect that immigration bill necessarily to pass anytime soon, but a lot of these things will happen, right?
That's right. Some of these will take a while. For instance, Biden is signing something that will start the process of revoking 100 Trump administration environmental regulations. That's going to take some time, but the administration wants to get started right away.
Scott, thanks for the update. Really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
NPR White House correspondent Scott Detrow is part of our team covering today's inauguration, which you'll hear live on NPR. All right. Now, once Joe Biden is sworn in as president, Donald Trump will be a private citizen living in Florida.
On his way out, Trump is using some of the powers of his office. He issued last-minute clemency to 143 people last night, including Steve Bannon and on-again, off-again ally.
And let's go to NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith, who is not on-again, off-again. She's just on. She's on, always on with us. Hi there, Tam.
All hours. Good morning.
All hours. So quite a list of pardons, 143. Can you talk us through at least a few of them?
Well, you know, there had been talk of Trump pardoning himself or his adult children, but as of 5:12 a.m. today, that didn't happen. Still, he followed a pattern that he has throughout his presidency, rewarding friends and political allies, even celebrities, with pardons and clemency. The big names are, as you say, Steve Bannon, who was indicted for allegedly defrauding hundreds of thousands of people in an online campaign to raise funds for building a wall on the southern border, then pocketing some of the money. He was one of the architects of Donald Trump's 2016 campaign and then fell out of favor with the president, but worked his way back in the last year, in part by publicly defending the president during his first impeachment. Elliot Broidy is a Republican donor who previously pled guilty to conspiring to violate foreign lobbying laws. There were also a handful of former Republican lawmakers and former Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. As for celebrities, Trump granted a pardon to rapper Lil Wayne, who pled guilty to weapons charges. He also endorsed President Trump in his 2020 campaign. There was the rapper known as Kodak Black and Michael Hario Harris, the co-founder of Death Row Records. They had their sentences commuted.
Tam, I'm thinking of a statement by Republican Senator Lamar Alexander a few weeks back. He said to Donald Trump, when you're in public life, people remember the last thing you do. He was trying to urge the president not to challenge his obvious defeat in the election. Well, the last thing the president has done, the last major thing the president has done is incite a violent attack on democracy. How is that affecting his farewell?
He is isolated. He's not going to the inauguration. He is throwing himself a departure ceremony at Joint Base Andrews this morning. But many Republicans won't be there. The vice president isn't going to be there. And top Republican leaders in the House and Senate, Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell, they will not be there. They're going to mass with Joe Biden this morning. And both have publicly rebuked him for the riot, which also led them to have to evacuate the Capitol.
And let's just listen to a little bit of Mitch McConnell speaking about that yesterday on the Senate floor.
The mob was fed lies. They were provoked by the president and other powerful people.
This was a powerful speech by the Republican Senate leader, Tam, not only saying flat out that they were lies, but also saying flat out that the president provoked the crowd.
And this is the question at the center of what will be former President Trump's impeachment trial in the Senate coming up very soon.
NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, the coronavirus death toll in the United States stands at more than 400,000 now, and the virus has killed more than 100,000 of those people in the past 5 weeks alone.
Things are especially bad in California, where health officials are worried that a new COVID variant is contributing to a surge in cases there. This variant is more contagious, and there are more variants emerging all across the world.
Which is a story that NPR's Michaeline Duclef is following. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
So how many variants are there?
So yes, there are many variants of the virus. Every region has slightly different versions of the virus circulating around. The vast majority of these variants are not a concern at all. They don't behave any differently than previous versions of the virus.
You said the vast majority. Why are scientists sometimes worried here?
Well, in the past month or so, three variants have cropped up on three different continents that do seem to behave differently from the rest. They seem to be more dangerous, more contagious, and they could possibly evade the immune system more easily. Scientists are calling these variants of concern, and they don't contain just one or two mutations. They contain about 20. And the most worrying thing is that some of those mutations are similar across all three variants. So it's like the virus has figured out independently at least three times now the same way to kind of spread more easily. Scientists call this convergent evolution. And I talked to Ravi Gupta about this. He's a microbiologist at the University of Cambridge and helped detect the UK variant. He says the rise of convergent evolution could possibly prolong the pandemic.
It is worrying because I don't think there's going to be a single solution that just kind of comes along in 2021 and says, that's it, we're done. That's not what's going to happen now. We are going to be in a cat and mouse game with the virus for a while.
Yeah, so the cat and mouse game is like, can we get enough people vaccinated before these variants take off?
And I guess we're hoping and assuming that the vaccine is still effective against these variants, that's not a variation so great that the vaccine itself would have to be changed.
Well, yes.
And what variants are scientists particularly worried about?
Yes, so there's one in the UK, which is highly contagious and is now circulating in the US at low levels. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention predict it will cause surges in March if communities don't get enough of the population vaccinated. There's also a variant spreading in South Africa and two in Brazil, which have mutations in them, which in the lab can decrease the ability of antibodies to neutralize the virus. And so what's worrying about that is that, yes, these variants may more easily reinfect a person who's already been sick and possibly make the vaccine a little less effective.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Yes. Well, remember, Steve, that these vaccines are highly effective. So a little drop in efficacy, they will still work. And in fact, everyone I spoke to said with the rise of these variants, getting vaccinated is even more important than ever before.
So where does the variant in California fit into all of this?
Yes. So scientists haven't reported much information about it yet. They don't know yet if it's more contagious, but it does have a few concerning mutations. And the variant started to spread in November, and now it's causing about a quarter of cases in some parts of California.
NPR's Michaeline Duclef, thanks so much for the update.
Thank you, Steve.
And that's up first for this Wednesday, January 20th. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Noelle King. We'd love it if you start your day here with us tomorrow. And it's Inauguration Day. It's a big one. So tweet at us, at Up First, to say hi.
And if you'd like your news on demand, check out the NPR One app. You get a mix of local, national, and international news wherever you go and whenever you want it. And you hear podcasts based on what you like. You download NPR One at the App Store.
The news moves fast. Listen to the NPR News Now podcast to keep up. We update stories as they evolve every hour. So no matter when you listen, you get the news as close to live as possible on your schedule. Subscribe to or follow the NPR News Now podcast.